Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and our paradigm shifters are people who are making a big difference in the collective of our species during this time of the Great Shift, which we're all hoping means we're all going to be peaceful and loving. Who knows? Anyway, tonight's paradigm shifter is going to help you and I understand how strange the paradoxes of life are and how so little of our life trains us to deal with them with love on both sides. So welcome to the show, Ragini Michaels.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here, Veronica. Thanks for asking me.
Now, I want to know, are you really unflappable? That's the name of your new book, and it really is a wonderful title, isn't it?
Thank you. Yes, it is, and I'll have to give my publisher credit for it. But it is a great title. You're asking me if I'm unflappable?
Yes.
I would say that I'm way more unflappable than I've ever been in my whole life. But it's nice to take a moment and understand what I actually mean by that, because it doesn't mean I don't have emotional ups and downs, which is what people often think being unflappable actually is.
Mm-hmm.
For me, unflappable is defined as being able to stay present and balanced in the presence of your emotional turmoil and your mental struggles. Because from my perspective, they're not going anywhere. So the only thing that really makes sense to work on is how do we relate to this fact that being a human being means emotional and mental ups and downs. And that's like the definition in a way of being a human being in terms of our experience.
Mm.
So to be unflappable is to be able to ride those waves of being of emotional and mental turmoil while still remaining happy, centered, and peaceful.
Well, and I also know this about you is, first of all, you're a hypnotherapist and you're an NLP, Erickson hypnotherapist, right? And
that's correct.
NLP practitioner. But my strongest memory, and for people who don't know this, I took some hypnotherapy class with Ragini some years ago, and it was really wonderful. But I know you go over to India or have gone to India fairly often to study with Osho or Rajneesh.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
And so you have that really wonderful kind of spiritual, philosophical center as well as living in the real world, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, navigating as we all do, even if we don't know, the outer and the inner. It's in my case, the inner was amplified by many trips to India and many meditation retreats doing Vipassana before that, and many hours of contemplative reading every day now. So I put a lot of focus on my inner world as well as on my outer world. So I think everybody has maybe the need to do that. Maybe we don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm a little bit compulsive about the inner, paying attention to it, and I'm learning to be as compulsive about the outer because they need to stay balanced.
Ah, wow. So on your journey, let's see now, you became what they say, the queen of paradox. Does that help explain how you can become a marketplace mystic? Marketplace mystic?
Well, I think what I'm trying to share with people is the value of becoming aware of paradoxes.
Mm-hmm.
And paradoxes really are something when you are caught between in a dilemma. And something, you want to go one way and you want to go the other way too. Most of us tune into that experientially as an inner tug of war.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about it as, well, on the one hand, I want to do this, but on the other hand, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or we say, I'm of two minds. Part of my mind wants to go this way and part of my mind wants to go that way. The problem with a dilemma, which is actually where paradox is hiding out,
mm-hmm.
so we don't really think of it as paradox. But it actually is, because what you're being asked to do in that moment by yourself is you want two things to happen at the same time, which cannot. So like a simple example is the dilemma is whether you're going to stay home and give yourself some time by yourself or whether you're going to honor your partner's desire for you to go out with them and party. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to do both, more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
You want to please your partner's desire and you want to please your own. The reality is you cannot do both at the same time. You cannot stay home and go out with your partner at the same time.
Right.
So it's a paradoxical thing in that you have to choose one of those, and if you the one you don't choose, you'll feel you lost something.
Right? Well, and I like your little list here, which says some of the reactions you can have to that are not great reactions, like guilt.
Right. Guilt, shame, anger, you know. You want me to go out with you again? Mm-hmm. You know, can't you give me my time alone?
And then somebody could say, oh, but you're selfish.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's 100 different stories that we create in our minds around how to handle dilemmas, because we frankly don't know how to handle dilemmas. And when you break down paradox into a dilemma, which is where it shows up, and then you break down dilemmas into what they're really made of, which is opposites that you can't separate from each other.
Mm.
And we swim in an ocean of opposites, you know, high and low, up and down, in and out, self and other, happy, sad, successful and failure, accepted and rejected. I mean, most of our days, we run into probably 100 times a day where we have to make decisions in relationship to dilemmas. We have two options. If we don't really understand the dynamic of this basic environment that we live in, it becomes very difficult, and we waste a lot of time and energy and oftentimes money trying to solve things that actually are not solvable.
Hmm.
What my suggestion is, there is a way to manage them. And I found out that way by actually studying the mystics and realizing that they had a different relationship with opposites than the average person.
Hmm.
And that's really a lot of what the book Unflappable is attempting to help people understand, that once you have it, it's really looking at how mystics remain unflappable. You know how mystics, they have this reputation of being able to stay present and calm and centered.
Be here now.
Unflappable. Mm-hmm. No matter what's happening. You know, their little hut on the top of the mountain is washed away, and they're just sitting there going, well, there it goes, you know. Right, where the average person will be pulling their hair out and frantic. And so my thought was, how do they do that? I mean, they're human beings.
Right.
They're members of the same species. So how does this person, you know, sit there and stay calm and present and loving and open and receptive when, say, some chatty novice ends up in their on their hilltop with them? And just chatting away, and disturbing their silence. You know, most of us would get very irritated by that, but mystics are credited with the ability to simply remain open, loving, and receptive for whatever's coming their way.
Hmm.
So my book, Unflappable, is really an attempt to share what I've learned about the power of looking at how the mystics thought and how they related to this. Actually three things. And that's opposites, impermanence, and paradox itself. And that's really what Unflappable, the book, Six Steps to Staying Happy, Centered, and Peaceful, is actually all about. It helps show you how to actually accomplish the same outcome.
Well, one of the things that it's taught me already is that it's very normal to have these extreme pieces of life around you, the good and the bad and the success and the failure and the desire forward and the desire against, right?
Yes. Yes. And when you really can understand that this is by design, that there's actually nothing wrong with that, it's supposed to be that way, that's the nature of our universe, is based on opposites, and life itself is really the tension between those opposing forces.
So even if you're in a spiritual meditational environment and you are by yourself, you can actually experience those in there as well, can't you?
Oh my goodness, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I've spent hours at meditation retreats in agony because of what was going on in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of helpful for us to realize that it's subjective awareness, all these opposites, right?
They are, if they're subjective and yet they're not going to go away. I mean, there's not an objective view doesn't make them go away. It just reveals that, in fact, the opposites are not antagonistic. They're actually in a creative collaboration with each other to support our spiritual awakening, to help us understand that the dark side and the light side actually are intimate lovers, and they bring so much to us when we understand that some of the truth that we're looking for is on both sides of the coin. You can't just choose one side and say, I want only the light and no dark.
So purification has got a different note here.
Purification is we're talking about the way you relate to the set of opposites.
Okay. If
purification is often understood as, let's get rid of it.
Exactly.
Now, ultimately, I think there is a place where you are no longer bothered by any of it, but as long as you're in a body, you are subject to the forces of duality. Therefore, knowing how to navigate it makes a lot of sense.
But what you're saying is that knowing how to navigate it begins with knowing how to accept and appreciate it, right?
Yes, and it's much easier to transcend duality if you know how to navigate it and you've accepted it in its totality as what is. You know, there's not a fight going on, and there is a fight going on because there's tension, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's tension, and the tension is wanting your attention, but there is a rhythm between opposites that goes on. I mean, just in the course of your own day, I doubt there are days that go by, too many days that go by, where you're completely free of anything that's even slightly shaded gray, right? Much less than a lot of dark thoughts there.
Right.
You know, judgments, comparisons, guilt, shame, anger, lust, revenge, comparison. You know, it just goes on all the time.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and so to be able to live with that and not put your energy into it as a problem,
mm-hmm.
but rather as something bringing you some wisdom to check out is very helpful. And that's really what Unflappable is trying to help people do by giving them a strategy for actually doing that.
Can you share some of the strategy? Wait a sec. I had another question. It was something like, oh, yeah, you were somewhere where I was reading, it was like you actually gain a lot of inner energy by appreciating the opposite and the dark part, don't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because instead of taking your life energy and putting it into a big no to whatever's happening, you're relaxing into what is, which always frees you and allows more energy to come into your being. Because what you're really doing is you're accepting something without conditions, and that takes you closer to the energy of love, you know, of really spiritual love, where you're able to allow what is to be embraced. So, yeah, it definitely, I mean, it's so much easier because it gives you freedom, in a way, from fighting what is.
So you feel that the mystics, or your experience of reading about them, has been that they have that capacity, or they affirm that capacity?
Yes, and yes, definitely. In my experience of being around people that to me fall into that category, the strategy I'm speaking about is their relationship, first and foremost, to opposites, which is the understanding. It was, and this is a lot in my book. Really, the whole book is based on this notion. When you set up what you like against what you dislike, you create dis-ease in your mind.
Which can be physical too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. And so when you do that, you are then actually saying no to what is, because opposites are the fabric of our daily lives. It's the fabric of our universe, of our mental, emotional, physical, and energetic realities that we live in as human beings. They all are composed out of the tension between opposites, you know, the law of polarity.
Mm-hmm.
Many people say, yes, yes, I know about polarities, yes, yes. And yet, I can watch and see them struggling with trying to get rid of one half of a polar pair. You know, I don't want failure. I don't want success. I don't want failure. I want success. I don't want poverty. I want wealth. I don't want to be stupid. I want to be intelligent. I don't want to be ugly. I want to be beautiful. I don't want to be fat. I want to be thin. I don't want to be Republican. I want to be Democrat, or vice versa, right? I mean, there is so much of our daily lives, our stories, are run by our desire to get rid of what it is we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basically also by design, because it is a function of our biological drive as animals to go towards what's pleasurable and to go away from what's painful.
And to go towards something that's developing or evolving or creating, hey?
Yes, there's a natural urge in us to also go to move, you know, to, mm-hmm. to move, to evolve, to come to a deeper understanding, to create, really. The urge to create is part of what gives us a sense of meaning and purpose. And that's also natural.
Mm-hmm.
So the more that we look at life as being fine as it is, and that's almost impossible to do. it's impossible to do it because of all the difficulty there is in life. If you don't have any insight into opposites and paradox and how it works to, and I'm going to go really esoteric here, to support our spiritual development and evolution.
Mm. You also mentioned, some teachers call it the negative ego, but you also mentioned that sometimes when you're saying, for example, life is fine as it is, there could be a voice that says, yeah, but you're not doing blah, 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 or you're never going to achieve blah, blah, blah. Sometimes we have that, and you're saying make peace with that as well, right?
I am saying make peace with that as well. It is, it's there, and fighting it only gives it more energy. Now, I'm not saying give it energy. I'm not saying, you know, you're right, let's have a conversation, you know, or let me give you all my energy. I'm not saying that.
Okay.
And I'm not saying to ignore it particularly. Mm-hmm. But I am saying to acknowledge it as the other side of the coin.
Hmm.
And to be at peace with it coming. It doesn't mean anything if it comes. It's if you're afraid of it, you will tend to give it energy by pulling away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually draws it toward you.
But it's a big job to realize it doesn't mean anything, right?
It's a terribly big job to realize it doesn't mean anything. But what's so important, what's so valuable about the fact of the six-step process that's in my book is it shows you how to get to the place where you can start to see that it doesn't matter. You know, just because you have a critical voice in your head doesn't mean that you're a bad person or that you are what that critical voice is saying. It's just an experience of being human. If you have a good voice, you will naturally have a bad voice.
I love a section where you're talking about somebody feeling badly about herself. And then you managed to say, how was it you put it? It's a mosaic, and of course, you have
right.
all these pieces. Maybe you can tell it better.
Well, that was pretty good. But yeah, I mean, most of us, you know, in America, we have the notion a long time ago of being a melting pot, right? Of bringing all the different, you know, the poor and the whatever from all the different other countries of the world to America, and we would all kind of come together to make this united, you know, country,
mm-hmm,
right?
Right.
Didn't matter about all the differences. Well, in a way, that really has backfired in terms of personal and spiritual evolution because it doesn't do much for what do we do with our differences except try to get rid of them.
Mm.
Now, you know, we see that in politics, we see it in religion, we see it in tons of places where people are very polarized to saying this particular thing is how we should all become, right?
Yeah.
And that melting pot idea sort of supported that. So I was suggesting to this student that she think of herself rather as a mosaic. And if you know what mosaics are, like a mosaic of stones, it can have all different kinds of stones in it. Some are sharp, some are rounded, some are octangle, some are rectangle, some are square, some are oval. You know, there are all these different things, and all of them together make up the mosaic. So if you look at one part of that mosaic and you say, this piece of the mosaic is ugly, right,
mm-hmm.
and I want to take it out, you won't have a mosaic anymore,
mm-hmm.
right? You will have destroyed the mosaic. And so when you look at every little piece of that, the positive and the negative, the ones you like, the ones you don't like, are all part of what make you who you are uniquely. And from a spiritual perspective, you are so much more than what you're looking at there.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that's telling me right this very minute, just in the way you're talking, that can teach us release in such a way as we can have self-love.
Yes.
Or it can bump up, am I right?
Yeah. And I think self-love is very important in the, at this level, before we're trying to love, you know, our higher self or get in contact with it. We have to learn how to love our personality structure and our body and our world here, which is composed of opposites. Mm-hmm. You know, and the other factor in that is that everything changes. So the one I mentioned earlier, that one of the things in mystic psychology is that they related to opposites differently and to impermanence. And whereas most of us really dislike change, do not like it.
We want security, Ragini.
Absolutely. You know, I struggle with that almost every day. I hear, oh, really? And I say I struggle with it because my mind and emotions struggle with it. But when you become more unflappable, you just see that and you feel it. You have to feel it. And that's one of the biggest things that I think is hard for us to realize, is that just because you're unflappable doesn't mean you don't feel the ripple of the pain or the fear going through your system. You do. But if you don't give it your fear, if you don't be afraid of it, if you don't judge it and you understand it, then it's just that. It's a ripple, right? And then you get to remain unflappable. It may come back 3 minutes later.
So what you're saying is you can... You just look at it and acknowledge it, do you?
You look at it and you acknowledge it, and you need to, I'm saying that it's really great if you can understand it. Because understanding duality is like the bridge from being a human being to being a more spiritual being.
Really?
Okay. Well, yes, I believe it is, because, and this has certainly opened the doors for me, because all of the struggles of being a human being all have to do with saying whatever's happening isn't what I want.
Well, that's true, isn't it? They're all like that. Even if you're in a meditation.
it doesn't matter. You know, I don't want this thought, or I don't want that pain, or you know, so once you understand and you really get, and this is first you want to get it consciously, but then you need to get it unconsciously. Because your unconscious mind is the one that makes the decisions about how you're going to see things and relate to things and behave. And as a hypnotherapist, I have a lot of experience that shows me that that's true, that we're really driven by our unconscious minds, not by our conscious understandings of things.
And do you still use hypnosis? I mean, could you combine hypnosis with this?
Yeah, actually, when you do some of the work, when you walk in the six steps, the last step has to do with walking in an infinity loop, which allows you to start putting into your brain and into your unconscious mind the strategy that this whole book is about teaching you, which is, if you're not going to set what you like up against what you dislike, then what do you do? And the strategy, the new strategy, is what this book is about, and it's based on mystical wisdom, which is ultimately embrace opposites, take impermanence and put it at the head of your advisory table. Every time you're going to make a decision, bring impermanence and invite it in and let it sit at the head of the conference table when you're making your decisions.
Great.
It helps a lot, actually.
Well, it's making a huge shift in my thinking as we talk. It's great.
Well, you know, everything does change. We all know it, but we don't necessarily face it as a useful piece of wisdom to embrace, you know? Because there's so many things to face that we don't want to lose.
Well, here's the other thing, too. As you're saying it, I realize that you can really accept it and get with it, but that in itself is impermanent, so you'll have to do that again.
Yeah. Nothing stays. Nothing, nothing, nothing. So if you can make... But what is there is the rhythm of life. The rhythm of life is there, and that doesn't change. And you can either go with that rhythm of life, or you can say, no, I don't want to go with that rhythm of life. And that's our prerogative, of course. And it's easy to say go with the flow of life, but it's not so easy to do if you don't know what the flow of life actually is. You know, what does that mean? And in Unflappable, I'm trying to share that what I have learned in my exploration of this is that life has a specific flow on this plane between opposing forces. Between happy and sad, between awake and asleep, between healthy and well, between rich and poor, you know, there's between being alone and together, between self and other, it flows. And you have oftentimes a lot of opposites happening at the same time, and it gets very confusing and chaotic.
It does get chaotic, doesn't it?
It really does. Mm-hmm. But there's a strategy in the book that will help you learn how to manage the different sets of polar opposites that are coming up in your life in whatever the problem is, whether it's relationship or work or power or purpose or faith. Faith is an area that's very, very powerful for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, the polarities that I talk about in faith, and you may use different words and that's fine, but faith is actually composed of trust and doubt, operating as a polar pair that actually are married to each other and dedicated to creating your faith.
Means we, and we can use the doubt to what?
Strengthen your trust.
Okay.
Because doubt is the inquiring component of faith.
Mm.
It's what allows you to stay free of blind faith and believe that you have the truth, right?
Yeah.
Because if you really have the truth, there's nothing to say or believe.
Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting. So doubt is like a testing tool, and but it's naturally built in, right?
I'm saying it's naturally built in, and here's why. Because trust and doubt actually define each other.
Hmm.
I mean, trust is defined by the absence of doubt, and doubt is defined by the absence of trust. So when you have you can't get rid of one. The minute you say trust, your unconscious mind accesses doubt, even if there's no doubt happening.
Interesting.
Okay? In your mind, there's still these two opposites, and that's why when you go to trust, you still feel a niggle somewhere. Right?
Yeah.
Because it's not a knowing. It's not a knowing. It's a trust. It's an act of faith.
Hmm.
It's just interesting. I mean, a lot of polarities function in that way. Self and other and are alone and together in the context of relationship is very much the same.
Well, one of the things you had in here was you. When you say you, then you think me.
Absolutely. You can't not do it because you is actually defined in the mind, in the realm of ideas, as the absence of me. And I go, that's how we know the difference, that you're you and I'm me, right? So you, when you understand that this is going on all the time in your own mind, as well as in the outer world, because a lot of people say polarities or opposites only exist in the mind, or duality only exists in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I would take exception to that because it appears that our whole universe is based upon the polarity principle.
Hmm.
You know, that our world is, even your body is based on the tension between the positive and negative charges in your cells. You know, so that's not something that's just in your head. It's the way we describe it, of course, is all mental. But the phenomena itself is that there's tension between positive and negative, and that's what holds your cell membrane in place.
Hmm.
So the same thing functions in every area of our lives.
So we want the dark. We want our dark. We want our shadow.
Yes, you want it.
Mm-hmm.
There's wisdom in it. There's wisdom in it. You don't want to identify with your shadow.
Mm.
You don't want to say, this is me. You want to welcome it as a visitor and say, what is your wisdom for me? What is it you're trying to show me?
Hmm.
And when you understand it in the context of opposites, it becomes a little easier. For example, let's say I'm in a relationship and I'm starting to feel that starting to feel very separate from my partner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going on different paths, right? And I start to get feel isolated and angry and a little scared.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if I look at my anger and my fear and my sense of separation as signals to me that I am in a place where I need the opposite. I need to feel connection. And my fear and my anger and my sense of separation and isolation are signals to me that if I think in terms of opposites, that I am really open for and need to find my balance, connection. Right?
Hmm.
And vice versa, if I'm feeling really connected to my partner, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I start to feel a little suffocated.
Mm-hmm. A little codependent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I start to feel a little suffocated and get a little irritated and start to get a little grumpy. You know, those, if you understand opposites and think that way, can become signals to you. These are the darker experiences. They become signals that what is really happening is you are ready to have some separation.
Well, so tell me that if you work that way with couples, do they all part? I mean, can they actually work it out?
They can if they begin to use the model with each other, sure. Yeah, I've had many, many couples be able to look at, because what happens in couples is you usually polarize. One person, for example, let's say, wants to spend money.
Right.
You know, they're a very big risk taker. The other partner is very polarized to security, right, mm-hmm. and wants to save all their money. And when it becomes extreme polarization, there starts to be fighting about it. You know, I want to take the risk. We can make more money. And the other one says, no, we need to save. The economy is really not secure now. We need to create security. And each person is so polarized and thinks that their way is the correct way and the right way that they cease to see the benefit of the other, of their partner's view. Mm-hmm. And they also cease to see the downside of their own view.
So they're embodying the polarities in their entire personality, sort of thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Big dynamic in couples. Mm-hmm. So when I show them the six-step process and show them how to work with the opposites that they're embodying and give them a tool for how to navigate that, then what I see is enormous changes in people, couples, because then they're able to navigate their differences in a way that allows them to see the benefits of both points of view,
mm-hmm.
and to also see the weaknesses of both points of view. Because, again, here's where impermanence comes in. If you decide there's some one way to do something and you want to get stable in that and not move, you are not honoring the nature of impermanence.
Hmm.
Because the ultimate directive in all things that we as human beings do and living systems is balance. So you can't choose one side of a pair of opposites and say, I'm going to stay here and not the other side, and think that you can find balance.
Hmm.
Because there's constant movement between polar opposites.
Hmm.
That's where we find the balance and the equilibrium we're looking for. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm just, you know, the word that's popping up in my mind as you speak is forgiveness. Is that a route to forgiveness as well?
I think understanding anything you can about yourself is a route to forgiveness. And I think understanding about polarities allows you to forgive everyone for not being who you want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a huge difference when you can just let people be who they are. And you know how to live with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, if it's a very abusive relationship or something, you're not going to want to live with that. You're going to want to move on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the way in which you move on, the understanding that you're using to free yourself to move on, can perhaps hold you back in your spiritual or personal evolution, or it can catapult you forward.
Hmm. That's really interesting. So what do you think of, for example, karma, that kind of thing? Because what I found in Inflappable is that it feels like fun. It's almost fun to go through the exercises. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of light. It's airy, but it takes me deep at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go, okay, well, what about the heavy things like karma that we hear about? Is this possible
You say an interesting thing, because right there, if I may use what you just said as an example,
of course,
most of us do have polarized to karma, mm-hmm. as almost always being something not so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we tend to forget that the good stuff we have is also the result of karma.
That's true.
If you're going to buy karma, then you have to understand there's the heavy and there's the light.
Right, okay.
So every blessing you have in your life that comes your way would be an example of good karma.
Mm.
All the difficult situations and things that come, the heavy things, are what we would normally call bad karma, right? But again, there's the polarity, good and bad,
mm-hmm.
right? If you took good and bad and you just said, here's the pleasurable karma and the painful karma, but they're both here to teach us something, right?
Right.
Then you might start having a different attitude towards how you would relate to karma, mm-hmm. and also what it is you're doing to create your future karma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how you relate to what is really where you're, if I understand karma correctly, how you behave in the present moment to what is determines your future karma.
Right. That, I believe that. I kind of believe that. I'm always asking.
Okay.
I'm one of those people that doesn't quite believe everything I believe. I figure is open for renegotiation or.
That's great. I think that's great because, you know, beliefs are things that we, you know, they're really things we assume to be true. But if we really want to know what's true, you have to keep clear that your beliefs are just beliefs and they're open to change. Right?
And they kind of decree what our life is going to be like at times if we don't even know what they are. Mm-hmm. It's very limiting, isn't it?
It is very limiting. So I think that the more that you allow yourself to understand opposites, the easier it is to create a relationship with life that is more accepting. Because there's nothing that you can do about that dynamic. You know, there's always going to be good and bad and right and wrong and up and down and in and out and past and future, because that's unless you're brain dead, you know, you don't have a mind anymore, you're going to have to live in that world of conceptual reality. And
so,
that's really the problem, is how we navigate that.
Yeah, so what about all this manifestation and creating our reality? I don't know if it was your influence 17 years ago, but I always say to people, from where? You can't just manifest without being in touch with what's subconscious or unconscious, right?
It's interesting. Manifestation is an interesting area. I think there's a lot of truth in manifestation for sure, you know, manifestation, if we buy karma, manifestation relates to that by being able to focus on what you want your future to be, mm-hmm. not in your thoughts and your emotions, etc. The thing where I think things like The Secret have missed a point of communication to people is, again, looking through the glasses of opposites, mm-hmm. because manifestation requires two things. It requires you putting your energy into making things happen, which is done by visualization and how you think and you're doing all the exercises that you do and attending to being positive more than being negative. But the other side of the coin is letting things happen as they want to. Mm-hmm. So one of them is making them happen as you want them to and letting them happen as they want to.
As they want to. So you have to let some things go. You have to let some things morph, right?
Yes, and to do this every day, because this is a process that can be going back and forth between those two. In an hour, in a day, you may go back and forth between those two many times, or in the course of a day, or you may do one for a week and then the other for a week. I mean, it's got a rhythm, but to know that that's there and that to focus on making something happen to the exclusion of knowing that the other half of the coin is letting it happen as it wants to. It's just a different way of talking about it, because in manifestation they want you to do your visualization, create your idea of what you want, imagine it's already happened, feel it, put in the emotional affect, which is very important in that model, and then let it go and don't be attached to the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very hard to do if you don't understand about opposites, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to want to control how it comes out.
Right.
Right. So unless you really have that you understand that you can't have one without the other, again, they define each other. Making something happen is defined by the absence of letting it be what it is.
And that isn't necessarily karma or not karma. That's just is, right?
It just is. Yeah. I mean, that's the way the world works, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. It sounds so funny, but this is verifiable by anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody argues with me that there are opposites. I've mm-hmm. never met a person who argues with me that our world is filled with opposites. A lot of people disagree with me when I say the best strategy is to embrace them. Some people say, no, we have to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get rid of the one. And I'm saying, ultimately, that's the choice that takes us down the road of increased pain and suffering.
Well, I think the tyranny of the hidden drives or the dark stuff is something I'd like to deal with. Not, you know what I mean? When you're blind to it and it just runs things, I think that.
Yes, and that's one of the things that I also think this is helpful about, because let's say, give me an example of like something that you think is run by something very dark, you know, for you personally or somebody you know.
Oh, I keep thinking about kids and drugs and anger, that sort of thing.
So you're saying what?
Or how's this closer to home? I'll say somebody who has a resistance to you because you're siblings or something, and they're always just hating on you, you know, that kind of thing.
And so are we talking about changing that person or changing your response to that person?
My response probably, yeah, my level of acceptance probably.
Okay. So then the polar opposite that you'd having to be dealing with would be whether you accepted or rejected that person?
Probably, yes.
So let's say it was that. So what you would do is understand what is it, is there any benefit to your rejecting that person? Is there something that comes to you that's beneficial when you are rejecting that individual?
A feeling of safety.
Okay. So there's one benefit to the dark side right there.
Oh, okay.
Because if you're in front of somebody who hates you, I think you better pay attention to whether or not you're safe. I think that makes sense. And so you naturally reject people who send that kind of energy at you. Right?
Yeah.
But rejection is not necessarily a bad thing in this case.
Oh,
now,
okay.
If you, let's just stay with that. If you stay rejecting of that person once you know that you're safe,
mm-hmm.
Okay, then it can become a difficulty. Because now, let's say that you know you're safe, is there any benefit to you remaining rejecting of that person?
Probably not, eh?
I can't think of any offhand, but let's say you decide to do it because you're afraid to accept that person. You're afraid to say to yourself, it's okay that they hate me. So you might start hating them back, for example.
Yeah.
You might start telling a story about how stupid they are to hate you. And, you know, there are 100 stories that could be said about that. But the real issue would be if you're contracting and starting to move into hate, which would be the downside of rejection, right?
Well, I think of more of long-term separation. I keep thinking that isn't so healthy.
With someone who hates you?
Yeah, someone who can't, who karmically erupts to me all the time.
And is there some reason, you know, I mean, you have to ask yourself if there's some reason why you wish to remain in connection with that person?
Family.
Their family.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, well, then it's great. Then all you have to do is really work with yourself to see if you can make peace with that person being eruptive towards you all the time.
Exactly. But that's tricky. But I know, I'm working on it, actually.
It's tricky, but the question is when you come back to yourself and ask yourself, it's not about that person, it's how you relate to that person.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it that's going on inside of you that's making you feel that you can't be accepting of that person?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the key. Once you understand that, it might be a completely different polarity that's at play.
And has nothing to do with ever having them accept you.
No. If you want somebody to accept you, change yourself so you accept them.
Mm-hmm.
And that will change the dynamic. It may not make that person love you,
mm-hmm.
but it will definitely change the dynamic. It has to. Because the hate, the kind of dynamic you're speaking about, requires both of you to be relating in a specific way.
Mm-hmm.
For you to be feeling, you know, for you to feel caught in it. Once you've extricated yourself from the situation, then you can be around that person. It may be stressful, you know, because it's not fun.
Right.
And you may decide you don't want to do it very often at all because it's just stressful and it's not fun. And why would you want to do that?
But I think it goes back to subconscious hooks from gosh knows when, other lives and so on. And I think that's a really interesting thing to try to unhook in other family relationships, not just my own, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing is there are polarities around families that we all almost always feel that connection is much better than separation.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, when you look at it from a polarity perspective, you want to balance out how much time you spend connecting and how much time you spend separating, and you don't need to feel guilty about it.
And you don't need to feel guilty about it.
No, that's the key.
Yeah.
Once you understand here's a polarity dynamic going on, and you're not so concerned with the other person, but you're concerned with you and how you are navigating this dynamic that's going on inside of you in that situation.
Right.
Okay. And I think that the six-step process that is shared in Unflappable gives you very precise directions for how to do that.
Well, I'm going to get my paper and pencil out and get to work.
Yeah.
Because that's not an unusual predicament for people. It's not an unusual paradox or whatever.
Not at all. It isn't. Because you both, with family, you need to be connected to family because you are. Mm-hmm. And you also need to be separate from your family because you are.
And because you're launching your beingness, right?
That's right. You need to individuate purely at a psychological and emotional level, but spiritually as well. You're a member of the whole, but you're also a unique individual. And that's another paradox. How can you be somebody who's just another little, you know, cog in the wheel, and at the same time utterly unique? And, you know, people understand sometimes that notion, mm-hmm. but when you get put in the situation, you find yourself in a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where unflappable...
Fear, hurt,
all of those things. Mm-hmm. Really, I mean, unflappable just gives you a tool for navigating the emotional and mental turmoil of being human so that you can ride it. You can ride the waves of it. You have a deeper understanding of it, and you become less and less identified with it, mm-hmm. and therefore you have less suffering. And much more ability to be happy, centered, and peaceful.
And self-loving,
absolutely. Because mm-hmm. your poor personality, it has to go back and forth between these things. It's the nature of its design. You know?
No wonder we're a little torqued at times, eh?
Yeah, you know, and when you start loving your inner spiritual terrorist or your inner critic or any part of you or your inner fatty or...
Or just knowing it's okay to have it. That's probably a huge relief for people. I find all the way through this book, I'm going, so much acceptance, so much,
yes.
You know, aha.
And that's really what I think, why I say getting a new relationship with opposites is so incredibly valuable. It catapults your self-awareness, your self-love, and your ability to just be with things as they are mm-hmm. enormously quickly. Mm-hmm. Because that is the foundation of how most things that flow in our lives are functioning and is in the nature of opposites.
That's wonderful. Now, I want to say this, we're almost at the end, but I want to throw in some of the things you're doing. Somewhere along the way, I was reading material, and I know you have a wisdom school, and I saw a little blurb on brain plasticity, which, to be honest, I didn't read enough, but I have... as you're talking about acceptance or all the six steps and polarities and paradoxes and so on, I'm going, does that, when we get the acceptance going or the understanding, does it shift our brains? Can our brain plasticity shift in response? Is it part of an evolutionary thing, I'm asking, I guess?
I think we could say it's part of an evolutionary thing, but the neuroplasticity refers to the fact that science has discovered that the brain can grow new neural pathways, and does.
Mm-hmm.
And because in my background with physiological psychology, you don't have any behavior that can arise in a human being without a neural coding for that behavior in the brain.
Right.
You can't do anything that your brain doesn't have a coding to do. So the six-step process is designed to help, and this book is designed to help your brain lay down the neural coding that will allow you to understand opposites better, which leads to more self-acceptance.
Mm. It must work, because as I read it, I felt better and better and better about my, you know, I don't hate my life, but I still felt much more, not empowered, more freed. I felt freed. It's a wonderful book for that, and I really recommend people take a chance on freeing themselves up and go through it with a fine-tooth comb. You have several things going, though. You have a wisdom school?
I am in the process now. Yeah, I am in the process now of trying to put everything online for a while and so I can reach more people.
Mm-hmm.
So I have one training coming up in the fall where I actually take your hand and walk through the six steps with you.
Oh, wonderful.
The ones that are in the book, but this is with me. And it's a program that's 8 weeks long, and you will get a module online every week for you to work through at your own pace and leisure.
Hmm.
And then on the Saturday of each week, you will have a live phone conversation with the group of people in the training.
Great.
And you'll be able to talk with me directly at that time and ask questions and get them answered. and there'll be downloads for you to, you know, worksheets and things for you to do. And then there's a bunch of other cool bonuses. You can go to my website and see what that is, and that'll be happening in October, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing that I'm doing. And then at the end of that, there is a couple of days long workshop in person, which you also have a free ticket to if you join the training, where you can come to Seattle and participate in, you know, a 2 or 3 day training that I'll be doing with the people who've been in the workshop.
Wonderful.
Yes, yeah, so you get a taste of doing it at your own leisure and also some time with me to do more trance work and intensive work at the unconscious level.
That's wonderful. Do you still go back to India?
You know, I haven't been back to India since 1991. Osho left his body and died in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
So I had not been back since then. But this work is, of course, part of my many travels to India and my exposure to mystics and other people. But no, I'm solidly rooted in Seattle, Washington, definitely attempting to join the modern race of how to get people to come and be aware of what you're doing, right, via the internet. It's a crazy, crazy world.
I always laugh and go, okay, this is life in the ashram over here.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Pay this, go here, drive there, click this.
But I think that's the biggest challenge of all, is the material and the spiritual and the inner and the outer. And knowing about opposites and having changed my relationship to them makes it much easier to be what we started off talking about, which is a marketplace mystic. Someone who's deeply engaged in their inner evolution while simultaneously being deeply engaged in the game of the outer world.
Yeah, and people who are contributors in a big way, even in the marketplace. Eh?
Yeah, yeah. It seems to be what we're being called to do these days. So
I love it.
I hope that my book is helpful to people, and I really appreciate your inviting me on to talk with me, Veronica. It's very nice. I would like to share this material with as many people as I can. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to your folks.
Well, it's wonderful. And I hope that our listeners will feel free to, well, email me, Veronica at Veronica Entwistle with feedback, or you can email Rogani Michaels. What is your email? Is that?
It's rm@roganimichaels.com. And Rogani is spelled R-A-G-I-N-I.
Okay, and your website is really an interesting website. It's simple. That's what I love about Unflappable as well. It's very deep and very complex, I know, but it's simple. It's a paradox in itself.
It is indeed.
And
yeah,
it can take you right there.
Yeah. The website is just roganimichaels.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Rogani, and we'll be in touch.
Oh, you're welcome, Veronica. Take care and my best to you.
So this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for tuning into Paradigm Shifters. That was Rogani Michaels. Tune into her process for becoming unflappable. You can email me, Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com, for a session, feedback, or suggestions of other guests. Thank you so much for listening. Good night.